Good morning. It is great having you at the Flint Central Church of the Nazarene. We're in a sermon series called Neighbors. That's why we got all these neighbors around here. And we began it last week. It's just a three-parter: last week, this week, next week. And last week we started it because Jesus says a lot about our neighbors. He talks a lot about neighbors, about what it means to be a good neighbor and who's our neighbor and how we can be a better neighbor and all of those things. Jesus talks about those things. Last week we started with a very familiar passage from the Sermon on the Mount. When Jesus said this, you've heard it lots of times. You have heard that it said, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those that persecute you. Jesus is saying, you've heard it said. Everyone there had heard it said. They knew the law. You all know this, Jesus is saying. Everybody knows this. You're supposed to love your neighbors, hate your enemies. But I'm telling you, love your enemies. In other words, treat your enemies like they're your neighbors. Treat those people that hate you. Treat those people that persecute you. Treat those people that think different than you just like they're your very best neighbor. That's what Jesus is saying. Love your enemies. Treat them like your neighbors. So that was last week. Today, we're going to look at another very, very familiar passage. In fact, if you don't know any stories that Jesus told, parables, if you don't know any of them, you probably know at least two. Most everybody knows the story of the prodigal son, and most everybody knows the story of the Good Samaritan. We're going to look at the story of the Good Samaritan because that was in response. Jesus telling that story was in response to a guy that asked him, who's my neighbor? So the story is told in Luke chapter 11. That's where we're going to find ourselves this morning. If you have Luke chapter 10, rather. If you have your Bible, you can turn there. It says this. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. All right off the bat. We know that this is a smart guy, expert in the law, a lawyer. Everything that I have right now is telling me not to tell a lawyer joke, so I'm not going to. Lawyer is about to test you. Teacher! What must I do to inherit eternal life? That's the big question. And everybody wants, how do I get to heaven? What do I have to do to get to heaven? Jesus answered his question with a question. What is written in the law? How do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus said. Bing, bing, bing. That's right. Do this and you will live. But he wanted to justify himself. The Message version says, but he was looking for a loophole. Sounds like a lawyer, doesn't it? Not going to tell a joke. Get back to the story. So he asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? Big question. That's our question for these last 3 weeks. Who's my neighbor? Jesus, the guy is saying, listen, I know that I'm supposed to love the Lord my God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. My neighbor as myself. So Jesus, who is my neighbor? I want to get this right. Who is my neighbor? Now, Jesus could have answered that in a number of ways, but this is what he said. In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest, happened to be going down that same road, when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place, saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. When he saw him, he took pity on him. Some versions say he had compassion on him. That's really probably a better translation than pity. Actually, that word in Greek that is translated pity or compassion, it's, I don't know how gross you want me to get on Sunday morning. The ancients used to think that the center of our soul, we would say, or the place of love is the heart. Give the Lord your God with all your heart. That's where they believe. That's where the soul was located, in your heart. But they believe the seat of emotions was your bowels. Now, that makes sense a little bit because, you know, when you're nervous, we say you have butterflies in your stomach. Or when something is really bad and you are going through very stressful, you may have stomach problems. So that's why they thought that. So this word that Jesus is using here, that he was moved with compassion, that he had pity on him, really literally means he was sick to his stomach over this gruesome scene. That it physically made him sick by what he had seen at this crime scene. He was sickened by it. So, verse 34 says, he went to him and bandaged his wounds, poured on oil and wine. When he put the man on his donkey and brought him to an inn to take care of him, the next day he took out 2 denarii. A denarii is a day's wage. So he took out 2 denarii, 2 days' wages. Figure it like maybe $100 a day. So $200 he gave the guy to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said. When I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense that you may have. And then here comes the moment of truth. Mr. Smarty Pants lawyer, here you go. Ask the big question from Jesus. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell in the hands of the robber? And the expert in the law replied, the only thing that the expert in the law possibly could reply without looking like a total jerk, and he said, the one who had mercy on him. And Jesus replied, bing, 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 good answer, A plus, that's right. Now go and do likewise. All right, what's it mean to be a neighbor? That's the question of the day. Now, you understand, the expert in law said, who is my neighbor? But that's not what Jesus answered. Jesus, if he wanted to, he could have said what we talked about last week. Who is my neighbor? Well, your enemy is your neighbor. The person that agrees with you, the person that disagrees with you, the person you like, the person you don't like, the person that persecutes you, the person that's nice to you, they're all your neighbors, so love everybody. Jesus could have said that. But of course, we see he didn't. So Jesus, what he's really answering, not who is my neighbor, but how do you respond in a neighborly manner? What do good neighbors do? What does it mean to be a good neighbor? That's the question that Jesus is responding to and answering. Being a neighbor, according to Jesus, really, it begins with seeing and vision. Vision is kind of a strange thing. You could be at a baseball. Last time this happened to me, I was at the All-Star game, the baseball All-Star game, in Kansas City a couple years ago, and maybe you've been at a big sporting event like that where they have a flyby, where fighter jets fly over your head. Have you been to some sporting events where that's taken place? And when you've been around those flybys, you're sitting in a stadium, but those planes make such a loud noise. It's a big rumbling noise, and you can hear it before you can see them. And so you know it's coming because you know you're getting ready to sing the national anthem and you know their flyby is going to come. And so you hear this noise and you're looking around the stadium. You're not sure because in the stadium noises echo. And you're looking around saying, where is it at? Where is it at? Finally, those three fighter jets come zipping over your head. They're gone before you can practically see them. They go whoosh. When they come, you go, oh yeah, I see it, I see it, I see it. Whoosh, they're gone. That's one type of seeing. But suppose you're at a baseball game that didn't have a flyby, but your friend that was with you knew a lot about F-35 fighter jets. And so he starts talking to you about it, and you don't understand. If you're like me, you know, you're not very mechanical. And he's talking about all these planes and engines and junk, and you don't get it. But finally, a light bulb goes off in your head, and you understand what he's talking about. And you say the exact same thing that you said when you actually saw those planes flying by. You say, oh, I see. But it's not the same thing, is it? The one, when you see the planes going by, that's physiology. You actually see it. The other, when you say, oh, I see, that's insight. And the story of the Good Samaritan and being the good neighbor that Jesus is calling us to be, it involves both sight and insight. We'll see it in the story. In the Good Samaritan, we see that the priest came by, saw the victim, and what did he do? He went to the opposite side of the road, kept on walking. Likewise, the Levite came by, probably a priest in training, saw the guy, went to the other side of the road, kept on walking. But the Good Samaritan came by, Jesus told us, saw the guy, was moved with compassion, was made sick to his stomach by the gruesome scene, and he did something about it. So that raises the question, did the priest and the Levite really see the guy? They saw the victim or the aftermath of the crime. They saw the ripped tunic. They saw the blood on the street. They saw the flies and all the other mess that may have been around. But did they really see the guy? Did they see the child of God? Did they see the person that Jesus loves? Did they really see him? You could make a case that they didn't see him at all. See, compassion begins by seeing. Compassion to be the person that Jesus calls us to be is to open up our eyes and see the needy all around us. Seeing is the forerunner to authentic compassion. Over and over again in his life, the Bible tells us that Jesus saw the crowds and had compassion. When he fed the 5,000 people, he saw the crowds and had compassion on them and told them to sit down. In this story, the Good Samaritan saw the man, had compassion, was moved with compassion. In the story of the prodigal son, the father saw the son when he was far away off and had compassion on him. Seeing is the forerunner to authentic compassion. That's what we're told in this story. So the question is, are you seeing the needs around you? Do you see the needy at your workplace, in your school? Do you see them? Do you really see the children of God who are suffering and struggling and with issues? When you drive through the city of Flint and you see the burned out building, do you see the needy and those that need Jesus and need the help of somebody to come alongside them and care for them and be with them? Do you see those people who are all around us? Do you see them? Seeing is the forerunner to compassion. Bob Pierce was the founder of World Vision. He had been in Korea in the war and came back and saw all those the hurting and the struggling. And he wrote on the front cover of his Bible these words, "Let my heart be broken with the things that break the heart of God." That needs to be our heart cry as well. Let my heart be broken for the things and the people that break the heart of God. See, being the person that Jesus is calling us to be, being this good neighbor, it begins by seeing. And when I was in Kansas City, I had the privilege of being involved a little bit with an organization called Heart to Heart International. Have you heard of Heart to Heart? It's a national charity now, but Heart to Heart began in 1992 by a guy by the name of Dr. Gary Morse. Dr. Gary Morse's house used to be right around the corner from where we lived. And Dr. Morse in 1991 went to the Soviet Union. Now, in 1991, the Soviet Union was still the evil empire, right? They were still, we were still in the Cold War, and they were still the enemy. And Dr. Morse went to Chernobyl because his idea was that he would see if there was a little work and witness project that he might do, maybe build an orphanage, help the children of Chernobyl. And so he went just to kind of check it out, see what was needed. Well, he got there. And this was before there's no Nazarenes in Russia, Soviet Union. This was before, you know, our own children's pastor, Kara Shoneman, she grew up in Russia. Her parents were the very first missionaries, Nazarene missionaries in Russia, the Sundbergs. This is before any of that. So Dr. Morse, she got there, and he went into, you know, he's a doctor, so he went into a couple hospitals, and what he saw was shocking. There were hospital buildings, there were doctors, qualified doctors, they had no medicine, none. And he would talk to them, how do they treat the sick and how they help the hurting? They had no medicines, none. And they didn't have supplies. They didn't have just the basics that you would have in any hospital in the United States. They had nothing. And so on his flight back from Moscow, back to Kansas City, God put in him. He saw the needs, and God put in him that he had to do something about it. This wasn't what was needed. It was not just a little work and witness project. He needed to do something about it. And so he began organizing churches and Boy Scout troops and Girl Scout troops. And they were having spaghetti dinners, and they were raising money so they could buy over-the-counter drugs. And then he came in contact with some of the major pharmaceutical companies in the United States, and he got them to donate stuff. And then he got the senator from Kansas at the time, Senator Bob Dole, and he secured a C-5 cargo plane, a United States Army cargo plane, to transport this $5 million worth of medicines to Russia. What he was doing, you see, was treating his enemy like he was a neighbor. And so they took all this stuff over there, and God used it, and with that was birthed this organization called Heart to Heart International. And now, by 2011, they had given over $1 billion in medicines and supplies to hurting people in 115 countries, including the United States, but 115 countries, and volunteers that went over there. And it all began. It all began with a guy in 1992 who lived at 1701 Chalet, right around the corner from my house, who said, God, you've given me a vision. I've seen the needy. I've seen what needs to happen. And God, you've got to use me to make a difference. And now literally millions of people all around the world have been helped because this one doctor said, we've got to do something about it. I can't just see the needs. I've got to do something about it. See, there's an element of compassion. There's an element of being the person that Jesus is calling us to be, being this neighborly person that not just sees the needs, but shows up. You see that in the story, the Levite, he was there, saw it, or the priest saw it, kept on walking. The Levite came along, same thing, saw it, kept on walking. But the Good Samaritan, he was walking down the road. He wasn't planning on finding victims who had got beat up on the road between Jerusalem and Jericho. That wasn't part of his agenda for the day. He was just walking down the road, singing a little Samaritan tune. I don't know what Samaritans sing. Probably green and white, fight, fight, fight. That's what I would guess. They're just singing his little tune, going on the way. He came across the guy. He was moved by that. He was sick to his stomach. He couldn't handle it. He had to help. He got off his donkey and he did something about it. There's an element of just showing up and being the person that Jesus is calling us to be. Let me tell you one more heart-to-heart story. There's a lady on one of their very first trips. Dr. Morse, it was kind of a vision trip, you know, where you take big wigs or whatever and they see the needs, and then you come back and raise all sorts of money and go and make a difference. Well, they were doing such a trip like that, and on this trip was a lady by the name of Diane Bosworth, and also she was of all things, just a stay-at-home mom. But then they had executive vice president of FedEx. FedEx has done a lot of the airlifts to all these countries for them for free. And there was a couple of executives from McDonnell Douglas, and there were some doctors and lawyers, and it was just, you know, all the bigwigs and Diane. And it didn't cross Diane's mind until she was actually on the plane from Kansas City to Calcutta that, what in the world am I doing on this trip? all these people are bigwigs. I'm a stay-at-home mom. And so she went up to Dr. Morse. She said, Dr. Morse, I don't know why you invited me on this trip. All these people are, they can do something. I can't do it. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I can't do anything. And Dr. Morse said, well, I don't know what God has in store, but I think you're supposed to be on this trip. So they got to Calcutta, and they were distributing some medicines and having meetings and all the rest. And they went into one hospital. It was a hospital mainly for children who were dying. You know, again, Calcutta, needy, terribly poor city. And so she's in this hospital. She went into this one wing, and it was all babies, and they were all going to die, every one of them. And there were overcrowded cribs, you know, more than one baby in a crib, and it was just horrible. And there was a sign on the wall. She asked the one nurse, what's that sign say? And the sign on the wall said, please do not pick up the babies. Well, Diane couldn't believe that. She said, well, why do you have a sign that says don't pick up the babies? And the nurse said, well, very matter-of-factly, well, if we pick up one, then the next one will see it, and he'll start crying, and then they'll all start crying, and so we've just made it a rule, we don't pick up any of the babies. You know, all these kids, they bring them in, they're going to die, they take them out and bring in another baby that's going to die, and no one ever pick them up. And so Diane, she was a person that kept the rules, she didn't break the rules, especially in a foreign country, but she decided that was a rule that was made to be broken. And so she just started going around. She started picking up the babies and singing to the babies and rocking the babies and caring for those babies. And she went up to Dr. Morse and she said, oh, you know, I'm sorry I broke the rule and said don't pick up the babies, but I picked them all up. And she said, I'm a mom. That's what I do. That's why I'm here. Listen, I tell you that story to say, I don't know what your gifts and your talents are, but I know this, you can do something for Jesus Christ. You can be a neighbor. If we're going to transform the city of Flint, if we're going to see Christ work in Genesee County, we need everybody on board. We need everybody using the gifts and the talents and the abilities and the things that God has given you to be a blessing to others. That's what we've got to be, you see. Does it upset you a little bit that the real losers in this story, the total jerks in this story, are the religious folks? It's the priest and the Levite who walked away. That bothers me, because if you don't know this, I'm kind of a religious guy. And so it bothers me that the priest and the Levite walked by. They should have been the first ones on the scene. They should have saw that guy. They should have been the ones moved by compassion. They should have been the ones that said, oh my goodness, what are we going to do for this guy? But they walked on by. That can't be us. We cannot look at the needs around us, whether it's a need in your school or a need at your work or a need in the city of Flint, and just turn a blind eye and say, well, that's just too bad. See, that's the easy thing to do. We don't like looking at the horrible. We don't like looking at the, you know, starving children. We don't like seeing those people who are affected by deep poverty. And so we like to look at nice things. Well, Jesus calls us to see those needs and to see those people that are hurting and to say, listen, I've got to show up. I've got to do something. Jesus has worked in my life and I've got to work in their lives. I've got to be a blessing to somebody else. Do you remember the story that Jesus told about the parable of the talents? Every preacher you've ever been around has preached from the parable of the talents. You know, the one that gets one talent, the guy that gets two talents, the guy that gets five. And everybody knows that the talent was a sum of money. Everybody knows that the one talent guy, you know, he was just kind of the loser of the story. And he went and he buried his talent and he didn't do anything. And the master returns, goes up to the one talent guy and says, where's what you've done? He goes, well, I buried it. And we know the story. He gets in trouble. The master kicks him out to the place where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. Really bad. And everybody says, I don't want to be the one talent guy. Well, I don't want to be the one. I don't even want to be the two talent guy. I want to be the five talent guy. And the five talent guy, the master gives him five talents. And I've thought about that. Why did the master give one guy one talent, one guy two talents, one guy five talents? I think he gave the five talent guy five talents because he knew he could trust that guy. He had seen him work. He was a good master. He saw his work ethic. He saw what he did with the things in his life. And so he knew he was trustworthy. And so he gave him five talents, and the guy did not disappoint. He turned those five talents into 10. I want that to be me. I want God to look at my life and say, there's a five-talent guy. And he'll take the blessings I give him, but he's not going to hoard it. He's not going to bury it. He's not going to keep it for himself, but he's going to take those five talents and use it for my glory. That's the type of person I want. And I want this church. We need to be a five-talent church where God says, I know that I can trust Flint Central. I can give them blessings, and they're not going to hoard it. They're not going to bury it. They're not going to keep it to themselves, but they're going to use it for my glory to make a difference in this whole world. See, we need to be a five-talent church. Remember what Jesus said in that story, what happened when the master returned? What did he tell the two-talent guy and the five-talent guy? He said, well done, my good and faithful servant. Well done. That's what we want God to say about us. Now, Flint Central, we're doing okay. You know, we've got our teens are going to Guatemala this summer. That's good. And we support Carriage Town, and we support Eastside Mission, and we've given thousands and thousands of dollars to World Missions. That's all great. I know I'm the new guy in town, and I haven't been around long enough. But can I just say this? I think we can do more. I think we haven't even scratched the surface. I think if we're going to see this community and our neighborhoods and our schools and this town and our world transformed, then God's going to look at Flint Central and we're going to take the blessings he's given us and we're going to be that church that doesn't bury it, doesn't hide it, doesn't hoard it, doesn't keep it to ourselves, but uses it for others. And God's going to transform this place. That's what we want to see happen. I want God to look at us and say, well done, Flint and Central Nazarene. Well done, my good and faithful servants. Way to go. You saw the needs. You saw what people were going through. You saw the struggles and you saw the issues. And you showed up and you did something about it. That's who we need to be. That's who God is calling us to be. I wish the Good Samaritan story had a chapter 2. Because there's an element in compassion that's just seeing the needs. And there's an element of just showing up. That's the sight. But there's also an element of insight, of saying, you know what? We can do more. And I think if Jesus would have gone on and told chapter 2, we would have seen it. And I think chapter 2 would have seen... the story of the Good Samaritan is really a story about kindness, Christian compassion. You know, there's the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness. That's what Good Samaritan is about. But if he would have gone on to chapter 2, he would have got to the next fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness. Goodness is saying, you know, let's do something about this issue. Let's not just fix the immediate, caring for the need, caring for the guy that got beat up, but let's do something about the whole issue. And I think that's what chapter 2 would have said if Jesus would have gone on. I think the story would have gone something like this. And it came to pass that the Good Samaritan got tired of going between Jerusalem and Jericho every couple of weeks and finding people that got beat up. And he was running out of bandages, and he was running out of money to pay the innkeeper $200 every single time. And so he thought to himself, man, I got to do something about this. And so it came to pass that the Good Samaritan went to the Department of Transportation. And he talked to the chairman of the Department of Transportation. He said, listen, I've been traveling the road from Jerusalem to Jericho every couple of weeks, and I'm always seeing people getting beat up. I think we need some street lights along that road. And if we had some street lights, then maybe those robbers would not be hiding in dark places and it'd be a lot harder for them to rob folks. And the Department of Transportation said, wow, that's a really good idea. And then it came to pass that the Good Samaritan went to the state police officers and he went to the commander of the state police and said, Mr. Commander of the state police, I travel the road from Jerusalem to Jericho every couple of weeks. People keep getting beaten up. I'm thinking if we had a few more big, strong troopers along that road, then people would be less likely to get beaten up and it'd be a better place. And the commander of the state police said, you know, that's a pretty good idea. And it came to pass that the Good Samaritan went to the Chamber of Commerce in Jerusalem and the Chamber of Commerce in Jericho and said, listen, I travel the road between Jerusalem and Jericho every couple of weeks. People keep getting beaten up. He said, but I think if we establish some neighborhood watch groups and people started organizing and started keeping an eye, because the police can't do it all, but if we started watching for them and helping out, that we would make it a lot better road. And the Chamber of Commerce said, that's a pretty good idea. And in Jesus' story, if he would have had a chapter 2, it would have said, and it came to pass that the road between Jerusalem and Jericho became the safest road around. See, there's a point being a good neighbor, being the person that Jesus is calling us to be. It's not simply meeting the immediate needs. It's saying, I'm in for the long haul. And I believe that God can work. And it's spirit-filled Christians that say, maybe sometimes the system is broken and we've got to work to change the system. And I'm not in just for the short term. I'm in for the long haul. And we want to see God work. And we want to see those people that are hurting and broken or doing the same things, stop doing the same things and find Jesus and start doing things the way that the Lord would have them do it. I'm in for the long haul. That's what being a good neighbor is all about. I told you last week a story about the people that live behind us, Carl's. And they were terrible neighbors. They threw their garbage in my backyard all the time. On the other side of us, our next door neighbor, right outside my bedroom window, probably 20 feet from my house, was their house, was Mrs. Betcher. Mrs. Betcher was a good neighbor. She was a Pentecostal lady, not a rolling in the aisles, handling snake Pentecostal. She was just a sweet, nice lady that happened to go, wonderful Christian lady who happened to go to the Pentecostal church. Well, one day, my friend and I were out front playing baseball. Why we were playing baseball with a real hardball, I don't know. But we were. And Kenny, that's my friend's name, Kenny was a terrible baseball player. Well, he threw like a girl, if you want to know the truth. No offense to all the females here. But he threw this fastball that was really a slow ball, and he threw it to me, and I was doing my best, you know, Miguel Cabrera impersonation, although back then it was my best Al Kaline impersonation, and I hit that ball so hard, it was a rocket. It went flying off my bat and right into Mrs. Betcher's gas light in her front yard, shattering it and causing quite a spectacle that my dad also saw. So he came to us, and of course we went up to Mrs. Betcher, and we apologized for destroying her gas light, and she said something like, oh, don't you worry about it, and my dad right behind me said, oh, no, we're going to take care of that. And so I took my allowance money, went up to the hardware store, bought glass, whatever, tried to make it good as new. I don't think it ever was good as new. We did our best. You would have thought we would have learned our lesson, but I guess I didn't. The next summer, Mrs. Betcher's grandson, Timmy, came to visit. I did learn my lesson that we weren't in the front yard playing baseball. We moved to the backyard, Mrs. Betcher's backyard. Well, Timmy, he was just a terrible baseball player as Kenny. He threw like a girl, too. So he threw an extra slow fastball, and I hit it like a rocket, only this time it went into Mrs. Betcher's kitchen window, shattering it. Well, she came out to examine the damage, and she looked at me and said, Rob, you're a really good baseball player. She should have been a scout for the Tigers, man. My career trajectory may have gone a different way. But this time, she said this. She said, Rob, we're going to keep this to ourselves. No sense telling your daddy. This is just between friends. Don't you worry about that old window. I'll take care of that. She said, but I think we're done playing baseball today. Why don't you come in and eat some cookies? You know, I don't ever remember playing baseball in the front yard or the backyard after that. And I tell you that story to say, Mrs. Betcher, she transformed us, really, by love. Just her actions. I don't remember all the words she said over the course of the years that she lived next door to us, but by her actions, she showed that she loved boys and girls. By those two incidences, she showed that, you know, she cared much more about little Robbie Prince than she cared about windows. And Jesus is calling to us and saying, listen, do you care for your neighbors? Do you care for the hurting much more than you care about a new dress or a new car or a new this or a new that? What are you doing to make a difference in the world? That's what he's saying.